South Africa's economy was once again saved to a large extent through the pandemic, or at least cushioned by the mining industry. Commodities may have recently come off the boil thanks to China's crackdowns, but the last 2 years have seen sustained high prices for PGMs, iron ore, coal, manganese, chrome, all major commodities that we mine here in South Africa. And we've seen this trend reverse over the last few months in certain commodities. Key commodity prices have rolled over in iron ore, the PGMs, some of the big ones. Coal, thankfully, still at elevated levels, but Transnet's woes continue to limit our export capacity. Meanwhile, we've seen oil kicking hard recently, and the Rand oil price is back to all-time highs, and coupled with elevated soft commodity prices is going to put a lot of pressure on disposable incomes. But at an industry level, the question is, what will and should mining firms do with the largesse that they've generated today to ensure that they are future fit and contributing to South Africa's growth? It's a key focus area at this year's Joburg Mining Indaba, and I'm joined now by Nhlanhla Nsibisi, climate and energy campaigner at Greenpeace, Neil Froneman, CEO of Sibanye Stillwater, and Julian Glovu, CEO of Thungela Resources. Welcome, gents. Neil, perhaps you can just kick us off, and let's make no mistake here. I think long-suffering shareholders deserve to be rewarded for their patience during the lean years. They stump up the risk capital, and they're always sort of last in line behind mining company employees, governments through royalty rents and taxes and utilities. Let's just start with how you would characterize this last cycle, because we've seen some remarkable capital discipline amongst the major miners, which really should mean that any downturn in prices will have less severe consequences than we've seen in the past.
Yes, certainly. And I think, Michael, you really summed it up in a way that investors are normally at risk. They've waited very patiently. I think they deserve some decent returns in terms of dividends. And that's clearly been done. I think the industry as a whole has certainly got its capital allocation framework basically right. Debt has been paid down. There is some investment taking place back into projects and sustainability. Of course, there are some challenges in different regions. In South Africa, we don't really have an investment-friendly environment, which is desperately needed to see further investment into our resources to make them, of course, more sustainable. But it has been a windfall. I think it's also important to note, though, as you said in your introduction as well, these cycles come and go, and I'm not suggesting this bull run has gone, but you have seen some volatility, and earnings have been severely dampened by the volatility in the last few months. So we shouldn't sit here thinking that this is going to carry on ad infinitum. We have to be prudent as business managers as well.
A very interesting point you make there on being prudent as business managers, because I think government also needs to be prudent around what it does with the windfall. And PwC released its report today on the SA mining industry, and it's very interesting to note direct taxes up from 10% last year to 14%. Mining royalties up from 3% to 5%. There's a very complicated formula with inside the MPRDA around mining royalties. So clearly government has got this windfall at its disposal. Not all commodities are created equal, though, so you do hope that coal might help support while others potentially soften over the short term. But for government to be using this to feed back into things like a basic income grant certainly doesn't seem like the right policy. I just want to move on, Nhlanhla, to Greenpeace's view here on the mining industry, and we're talking about how it can contribute to South Africa's economic growth. And we know that miners need a social license to operate. What is Greenpeace's view?
So thank you very much. In terms of where we sit as Greenpeace is that we like to see responsible investments. And I hear Neil when he's talking about ensuring that There's sustainable growth in the mining sector as well as in different sectors. And by the way, we are totally not against any kind of investment that's happening, whether it's in mining. But what we are more concerned about is how responsible considerations are being made when it comes to investments. We've seen all of the side effects in terms of mining. We've seen that as far back as when we were doing gold mining in the area of Johannesburg. We are sitting with dumps and dumps of soil that has been mined out. We are seeing quite a lot of acid drainage that's happening. So the question that we're actually posing as Greenpeace is that when we do our investments in mining, what are the side effects and how are we actually mitigating that? And we still have a lot to actually do as a country to make sure that whenever investments are being made, that they're made in a very responsible way. And we don't want to see the kind of pollution that's actually left behind. So I would like to actually challenge all the investors, because we are seeing also when it comes to investment in coal, there's a lot of the drawbacks that are taking place in terms of countries as well as businesses that are actually now trying to divest away from, from coal, because as we know, the impacts that coal has in terms of carbon, etc., and how it's leading up to climate change.
Many issues addressed there. In July, to segue into your arena, which is the coal arena, Thungela has done exceptionally well since being spun out from Anglo. And we're talking about this issue of a just transition at the moment. And one almost gets the sense that the pendulum has swung so far in favor of the E in ESG that we're not talking enough about the S, and the fact that in the IRP it still says we need coal over the medium term. It's a big employer, and in Mpumalanga in particular. What is a realistic time frame for a transition given those social and economic consequences of a move away from coal?
Thanks, Michael. I guess your segue is right. What we're not talking about is actually a swing to E. We're actually talking about a swing to emissions rather than E. Because E is broader than just emissions. It talks to land stewardship. It talks to water management, some of the things that Nkanta is referring to. But equally, if we want to have a balanced conversation around the transition, and you call it just transition, Nkanta is calling it the responsible transition, if we've got to balance society's needs, we've got to move away from this two-track conversation, which is, it's either fossil fuels or none. Because the reality is different. Where we are today is a consequence of failure to recognize that the transition has to be done in a coordinated and responsible manner. What you can do is just switch off fossil fuels and not take into account the impacts on the societies who are entirely dependent on what is the most readily available commodity, what is the most affordable commodity, whose societies are dependent on earnings from coal. For instance, South Africa, coal is one of our biggest foreign currency earners. It's the second single largest employer in the mining industry. We can't wish it away just like that. That same story plays itself out in a lot of the emerging markets that we supply coal to, that they've got very young generation fleets, that to be able to switch it off is going to require significant investments. That requires a significant trade-off between where money gets invested by governments into retiring what is perfectly usable infrastructure or investing in social services. You cannot ignore the impact of, on energy poverty and the need to bring a billion people out of lack of energy into any modern energy services. This is the role that coal plays. So when I talk about having a far more balanced conversation, this is a people conversation. Mm. How do we ensure that as we do this, we're not asking people, poor people, to bear the brunt of the sacrifice that is required for this transition? Because we have to do it in a responsible manner.
I think putting people at the center is exactly the right kind of conversation. And Neil, to bring you in on that point, and we look at how cash flush the major mining companies are at the moment. I think the big question is, how do they do this? How do they invest for future growth that is sustainable within this broad context and conversation that we're having about pivoting away from fossil fuels and focusing a lot more on the externalities of mining?
Yeah, so I think the first point is that ESG issues have to be primary, and they have to be absolutely your center focus. Environmental issues are real, and I think global warming is a real issue, and we have to abate it. So we have to be very cognizant of the E. Of course, livelihoods are incredibly important as well, and certainly I think this is not a digital situation where you switch off coal and you don't replace it with something else. There needs to be a just transition to new energy sources that'll create jobs. There needs to be a transition from perhaps underground coal mining to building solar farms, wind farms. And the reason I say this is if we don't embrace the change that's in front of us, and it's not going to happen overnight. If we don't embrace that change, the many products that South Africa produces, whether it's a car that is exported to Australia or to Europe, will not be sold. It'll not be acceptable in the rest of the world to buy products that have high emissions associated with them. So we're going to have to find the balance as a country. As July says, we got to take cognizance of the social impact, and that's why it's a transition. It can't be a step change. It's got to be responsible. It is going to cost money. We're all going to have to invest in it. But ESG has to be primary. And you have to acknowledge all those components. I just see it as one source of social support being replaced by another as we go through the transition.
And I want to come back to that point on social report, because there is a question about whether it's possible or even desirable for mining companies to be filling the service vacuum at a local government level. But we do know, as we build up to the local government elections, that's where the deepest incapacity and state failure rests. So, what role do mining companies play when they're already paying so much in royalties and taxes? But I want to stay on this issue just for a second longer. And Klumpler, and you singled out coal and acid mine drainage in particular. I had the good fortune of touring the Emalahleni water treatment facility a couple of years back, which I think was a joint venture between Anglo and BHP at the time, and a few other mining companies that basically takes AMD above ground runoff and retreats it through a three-stage process, reverse osmosis. The byproduct is gypsum and potable water that is then fed back into the local municipality. It's a great example of the kinds of solutions that can be applied here. Are you seeing, and you did reference the gold mining days of years gone by, are you still seeing this kind of behavior in the current mining setup? Because whenever I attend a mining results presentation or chat to a mining executive, they are so firm on the ESG being the center of their focus. Where do you see the mining industry outperforming, and where do you see room for huge improvement?
Yeah, no, thanks for that question. So just to actually go back to the issue of just transition, and I fully agree with what has been mentioned as to what a just transition needs to be. And it will not happen overnight, and we recognize that as a civil society. Now, leading up to your question, in terms of how the ESGs are being applied, we have a problem, because the problem is that it's all good in paper. And I'm glad that you've given an example in terms of how you see that water is being recycled. But there are a huge number of areas where actually that is not being done. And fortunately, we also spend quite a lot of time in the provinces like Mpumalanga, where all these incidences are happening. So that's practical examples to tell you that what is on paper is not really happening on the ground. And what we would like to see is that how about there's a little bit more engagement with communities, because actually communities are sitting with a lot of intelligence. And when I talk about a lot of intelligence, I'm talking about they see these things on a daily basis. And it's not like those who are actually doing mining are not seeing that. They are actually also seeing it. The problem is the implementation, making it a point that the very water that you are referring to pollute the rivers that's actually used by communities, but also downstream that are also used for farming, that are used by animals to drink, etc. So what is happening on paper, or the discussions that we are having right now, are not good enough in terms of that being translated into practice. And yes, I also fully agree that in the long run, we can't just be talking about two streams or one stream, but we need to be talking about how do people interact with the environment, how do people actually benefit from the environment, how do we do business in the environment, and how in the long run all of this does not have a negative impact. And I'm glad that Neil actually touched on the fact that climate change is real, and we need to acknowledge that. And if you don't start doing something now, then we're going to have a challenge.
And Dr. I think you raise a very important point there about how mining companies are actually engaging with the communities. And July, perhaps you can just give us an example as Thungela about how you're approaching community engagement at this time where it is all about ensuring that through this transition, there are opportunities, and there's a lot of communication, two-way communication, between what the mining companies are planning and what the communities are experiencing on the ground.
Our vision and certainly aspiration as a company is to go beyond just engaging with communities. We want them to benefit from the success of our business. And that's part of the reason why when we demerged from our former parent, Anglo-American, we actually set up an employee and community partnership forum. So that in a meaningful and authentic way, our engagements are not just about let's talk about what we're doing for you as a company, but they can actually be part of defining that destiny for us and their shareholders in Thungela. And I think that's quite an important consideration. The second thing that we're doing really is beginning to go beyond just talking about these things, but actually beginning to provide what I prefer to call demonstration and proof points of the things that we say. The first one you mentioned, and we are the proud owners of the water treatment plant, where we're actually taking water not just from our mines, but from all the other mines in and around the basin, clean it and make sure that it's portable and we can actually supply water to the local communities. 90,000 people benefit as a result. We're actually working on some really interesting ideas, again, with communities in and around the basin. We are developing technologies that allow passive water treatment. In other words, you don't need an expensive investment like you saw of the water treatment plant, but you can take water that is contaminated, be able to treat it passively, and be able to use that for irrigation purposes. We have now been together with the DMR, Water Affairs, and Environmental Affairs at our Mafube mine, been able to actually demonstrate that we can get the same sort of yields that you'd get with normal rain. When you use passively treated water to be able to irrigate crops. That is a good example of a partnership between ourselves, government, and civil society that can benefit communities. And I think what he is saying is important, that when we deal with environmental impacts, we should move beyond putting it in glosses, but making sure that those who are most affected by activities can participate in mitigating those. That could even be rehabilitation. And on one of the pieces that we recently closed, we've got a community partnership where the community is actually doing the rehabilitation themselves. And we're engaging in a creative process to say, after the rehabilitation, what can we use this land for? And we're getting ideas of what we could do post-rehabilitation. And I think that's where we're beginning to drive the S of the ESG in a meaningful way.
And Neil, I mean, you've got a partnership with DRD Gold now at the moment, and the other Neil, Neil Pretorius there, often talks about these different capitals that he's a steward of, and what they're doing, and back to Nkandla's point, is reclaiming those mine dumps around the city, finding the tailings gold that's left, and then hopefully rehabilitating that land back to some kind of agricultural or commercial use. That seems to be a really good example of how mining companies are approaching this new future where ESG is so central.
Yes, and I'm pleased that you've given me the opportunity, Michael, just to respond to these tailings issues on the Johannesburg landscape. Through our subsidiary DRD Gold, we are doing exactly what you've described, and I must say that there are many practices of the past that are completely unacceptable in today's modern society. So, tailings dams being established on watercourses, tailings dams generating acid mine drainage and affecting the quality of water. Those things will never happen again. And never, I know, is a long time. But we are committed, not that we were part of creating those dumps. We are committed to uplifting them, where commercially we can do it in a profitable way. We do that. We work very closely through DRD with our communities in these areas where there are dust issues. We try and prioritize those and create sustainable tailings facilities that are safe, that are not poisonous, and so on. So that commitment is happening, and I would say that in 10 to 15 years, the skyline of Johannesburg will look very different due to the work and the efforts of DRD.
The one frustration that I have picked up, though, is working with local government, very, very slow to get authorizations and approvals through the door. And I just want to segue now onto the role here of local government mining companies in this conversation, and whether or not it is even desirable or possible for mining companies to fill that vacuum of services at a local government level, power supply, health, education. Often this forms part of a social and labor plan, but mining companies pay taxes for that kind of thing. I mean, where do the lines start to get a little bit too blurred here? Maybe Nkandla, we can start with you on this one.
Michael, there is no doubt that the country is unfortunately going through what some would refer to as a political turmoil, and that unfortunately translates into service delivery. And you're absolutely right that the services, and when I'm talking about services, I'm not only referring to what's being delivered to townships, but also what is being delivered in terms of infrastructure within the given locality, in terms of how water treatment is done, for example. Companies are paying tax, and we acknowledge that. But there's a huge gap in terms of the delivery because of capacity, because of corruption, and we can't run away from that, because of the cronyism that we are seeing. Even us as a civil society, as much as we are focused on environmental issues, we are also keeping an eye on what the political side of things, how are they actually happening. And in this instance, we see a huge failure that's now leading to all of these dysfunctional things that are happening in terms of the different spheres not providing what it should provide. And you go to each and every locality, especially, around the mining areas, and you see that to be rather a little bit more stark in terms of not only what needs to be delivered, but also how local government within the authorities, I mean, the authority that they have, how do they hold, for example, mining companies accountable, besides the fact that they have to focus on delivering for communities. So we see that dysfunction, and that dysfunction cannot be ignored, and which is one of the reasons why we occasionally call out government to sort itself out, whether it's from the national, provincial, or to the local level, because if they are not called out, then we're not going to see the improvement in the services that that we'd like to see. And however, another thing that I just need to add, Michael, is that I think a business has a responsibility, as much as a civil society does, to actually call out these authorities in terms of seeing where there's a capacity gap and trying to assist those.
On that point, we've got a minute to go, so I would like to just get a comment from Neil and July on this issue. Neil?
Yeah, listen, Nishlansha is spot on. We've actually taken a decision because we can't rely on government anymore. We suffer the brunt of community unrest because of a lack of service delivery. So we've made a very conscious decision to do even more than what is expected of business. The unfortunate thing, and this will be the last thing that I say, the unfortunate thing is we lose our competitiveness as business when we have to compete internationally because we are doing what government should have been doing. But we've stepped up to the plate to do exactly that.
Because these things do come at a cost. July?
In certain instances, Michael, the mining company is the only source of services. They provide schools, they provide, and under those circumstances, it's right that we do step in. However, it is disappointing that in certain instances, where government, which receives our taxes, and we are not different to another citizen, we're just a company and we're a responsible citizen, we also should speak up and call them out to ensure that they deliver the services that not only us as companies expect, but the citizens that live around our mines do expect. Well, we can play our part, but they should play their part as well.
It is one issue that I think most South Africans certainly do agree on. Government needs to be held much more accountable for the failures of the past, and we do hope to see that at the upcoming local government elections. Thank you very much for a really interesting and insightful panel on how we make mining more sustainable into the future, given our context as a developing economy. Around the table, we had July Ndlovu, the CEO of Thungela, and Nhlanhla Sibisi, climate and energy campaigner at Greenpeace Africa, and Neil Froneman, CEO of Sibanye-Stillwater.